was a lot going on. We just wrapped up the 2026 legislative session. We're also heading into one of the busiest travel weekends of the year, Memorial Day weekend. So I think it's a good time to check in with the DOT. Josh Morgan is here from the Connecticut Department of Transportation. Hey, Josh, how are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. I think let's start with a couple weeks back. We finished up the 2026 legislative session, and I know there's still some T's to cross, I's to dot, and so on. But anything that you felt were key takeaways as far as DOT is concerned?
Yeah, I mean, really what stands out is some of the roadway safety provisions that had passed. We're so appreciative of the General Assembly's continued support. You and I have talked about this frequently, but what was proposed in our legislation and what ultimately was passed was increasing penalties for those drivers who are distracted in work zones. So someone who is messing around with their cell phone is distracted in a work zone. That's going to be a reckless driving penalty now, endangering a highway worker. So it's going to be a stiffer penalty, a stiffer fine, because it's serious. You take your eyes off the road for a second, and that could be life or death for you or one of the hundreds of workers who are out there improving our state's infrastructure. So the other thing that stands out was granting us the ability to implement flex lanes in I-84 down in Danbury. So that was something that we needed a statutory change to implement. So we're going to move forward with that in design and hopefully start construction in a couple of years. But overall, again, you know, we're focused on roadway safety. And as you mentioned, especially important this time of year as we head into the busy summer travel months.
With the tougher penalties, Josh, does that include points on your license or potential license suspension? I know you and I had talked about, I don't want to say debated it because I think we agreed on it, but I don't know if it went forward with going that far as to lose your license.
Yeah, it's going to be strong because it's not automated enforcement. This is going to be troopers that are pulling people over. So those are assessed differently when it comes to notifying your insurance, notifying Department of Motor Vehicles. The monetary fine, the penalty is significantly more. So it shows the seriousness. It's not just, oh, I'm going to check an email or I'm going to respond to this text message. We really wanted to have those penalties, points, fines, impacting your insurance because of how serious it is when you're distracted in a work zone.
Okay. So I'm sorry. So are you going to have points on your life? Okay. Yes.
This is different
because,
when it comes, when the automated enforcement, since it's using the technology, those are assessed more like a parking ticket.
Got it.
A trooper is actually pulling you over, the penalties and the impacts to your insurance and vehicle registration are greater.
Okay. No, I was just making sure because to me, as you mentioned, I think, we talk about slow down, move over. We talk about the importance of especially heading into, I hate to say it, but the 100 deadliest days on the roads, which is the summertime, more young drivers out there. You know, I think it has to be more than just I paid a fine and, oh, that's a bummer to my wallet. I think the idea of losing your car or losing the ability to drive whenever you want, wherever you want, I think holds a lot more significance. So I'm glad that that is part of it.
Yeah, and you and I have talked about it before. Like, you'd hope people would do the right thing. Okay, they're not going to. You think a monetary fine would do? People are going to pay that, and not think twice. But people's vehicle, that license is a lot of times their freedom, their mobility to get to work, to socialize, to travel. And if they don't have that, maybe that's a deterrent as well. But we don't want it to come to that. We just want people to do the safe, responsible thing and think of the men and women who are working on the roadside, moms, dads, brothers, sisters. They're people just like you and I. Let's give them the respect that they deserve and let's do everything we can to keep them safe.
Yeah, absolutely. And Josh Morgan is here from the Department of Transportation. You also mentioned, Josh, the flex lane. Now, this flex lane that's going to be coming to Danbury, it's the first in the state of its kind, right?
Yes. Yep. Correct. So, we've long been looking at how we can, alleviate the rush hour congestion that is, the Monday through Friday, heading out of New York into Danbury, heading down from Newtown into Danbury in the afternoon. How can we alleviate that congestion? It's very densely packed, the highway there. Everything's built up around it. So we looked around to other states, talked to our colleagues around the country, and states in the Midwest have used this before. So we're going to give it a try here in Danbury. So what this would mean would be opening up those median shoulders during those peak rush hour times, basically adding a travel lane during rush hour, and then keeping it closed during non-peak travel times. So we're still in design. There's still going to be opportunity for public comment. We're not expecting to start construction for about 2 more years.
How does, just remind me again, Josh, how it works where, so you can understand those peak times where it is opened, but then when it's closed, what does that mean? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, so there's going to be overhead signs indicating when the flex lanes are opened or closed, but there's also going to be camera technology deployed through the corridor. One, to monitor the flex lane. You would never want to have that opened up during evening rush hour if maybe a couch had fallen off a vehicle and was off into the shoulder.
Maybe a vehicle
was disabled and pulled off to the shoulder. So we are going to have staff that are going to be monitoring that, but also being able to have some automated enforcement potentially if people are going to be using that as a normal travel lane, because that's not the point. The studies have been pretty clear that, you know, adding lanes to the highway can help in the short term, but it doesn't necessarily help in the long term. So using the flex lane to just address those peak travel conditions, those peak volumes, is a way to lighten that congestion, help people get to where they need to go without having to really expand the highway. We're going to be able to do everything in the existing footprint that's out there right now.
And again, this is the flex lane along I-84 in Danbury between exits 3 and 7. And what if there is an emergency, Josh? I would imagine that that lane, which is going to become the flex lane, that would have been used for fire trucks, ambulances, things like that. If it's during those peak times where the flex lane is open, what does that mean for emergency vehicles getting through? Is it just kind of, I don't know, because now the breakdown lane has become the flex lane.
Yeah, I mean, treating it like any other roadway emergency. When people see those sirens, being able to pull over to the road, pull over to the side, try to make that lane available. And again, it's something that, you know, we're going to have to do a lot of education on, a lot of public outreach on. So we're still really early in the process as design's moving forward, but we're going to have to really get the word out there in 2029 and 2030 when this thing gets ready to open up, so people are using it appropriately so it gets the greatest benefit for the traveling public.
If we see that this is a great success, Josh, could we possibly do something like this in lower Fairfield County where there's so much congestion on I-95?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to look at all of our highways and see where it makes sense. Danbury is a unique situation because of how wide those median shoulders are. Mm. We're converting them to a travel lane. Easy for me to say. It's not too difficult. I'm sure it's way more complicated than what the engineers lay on. But some of the areas you think of, like Merritt Parkway, there's not a lot of breakdown show. There's not a lot of area there to actually have it be a full-time travel lane. So it has to make sense, but it's certainly something that we're optimistic about based on what we've seen from our counterparts around the country. But yeah, let's see how it works in Danbury and then see if there's other places in Connecticut where we may be able to deploy a similar project.
And I know you just mentioned it, but that was also part of the approval process during the legislative session. There will be speed cameras for the flex lane, correct?
Yeah, well, not so much speed, but so much enforcement.
Enforcement.
So making sure that people are using it only when it's open. So we don't want to have that be just a dedicated travel lane. And again, that's for to help with the roadway volumes, but also we are only going to open it if it's safe to open. Like I had mentioned, if there's debris in the roadway, a vehicle, emergency response happening, we want to make sure we keep that closed so there's not a further collision or another incident on the highway.
This probably sounds really foolish, Josh, but it's one thing to educate Connecticut drivers, but one of the things that I believe it's gotten fixed at this point, but one of the things that was an issue when GPS apps started to become a thing was when you have out-of-state drivers not knowing our highways as well as locals would. How do you address people who are traveling from out-of-state understanding the flex lane?
Yeah, so that's part of what the project cost is going to have, is putting these new overhead gantries, the big metal supports that go over the highway, and actually having digital screens on them. So even if you've never driven into Connecticut, into Danbury before, it'll be very clear when you see a box that has an X on it or a box that has a green check mark on it, I think most people understand that, you know, one means that's good and one means that's closed. So we're going to have that out there, out on the highway. So even if people never, have seen this before, I've never heard about it, and the first experience is them on the roadway, there's going to be a lot of detailed display information out there to hopefully communicate that clearly to the public.
We're chatting with Josh Morgan from the Department of Transportation and talking everything transportation, our roadways here in Connecticut. And I do want to talk about Memorial Day weekend, which is coming up in just a matter of days, and just traffic concerns, things like that. But first, Josh, I wanted to talk about something very, very local, a matter that was brought to me actually by a WICC listener while I was doing my diner tour and I was in Wilton. Because it matters, and I always love when I get things from our listeners. And this has to do with the Cannon Road bridge closure in Wilton, and Route 7, the intersections, I guess, along Route 7. There was a push multiple times, in fact, twice, by the Wilton Police Department to put traffic signals, temporary traffic signals in, because I guess this area is very congested and there's just going to be a lot of traffic troubles, can be very dangerous. And apparently it was rejected twice by the state. I wasn't sure if you could comment on this.
Yeah. So familiar with the project. It's actually one that while the town is administering the project, the state and federal government's actually paying for it. So we're going to be reimbursing the town for this project as part of what's called our federal local bridge program. So topic for another day. But for this one in particular, when the Wilton Police Department, something called the Local Traffic Authority down there in Wilton, they had approached us with the detour route. And, you know, we never start with no. We start with, yeah, let's take a look at it. And where the temporary signal had been proposed to be installed actually would have created sort of a negative ripple effect on other parts down on Route 7, just because of what the roadway volume there would be. You think of a signal with maybe one car stopped at it and then all the other cars being stopped as well. So it has to make sense. But what we did do is work directly with the town to actually adjust the detour, move that to an area now where there's an existing signal already. And that's thanks, you know, between our engineers, the local traffic authority, the local community. I think it's a good compromise as this project moves forward. So the revised detour route has been approved, and so important for the members of the community, people who are traveling through. Make sure you're following those posted detour signs. They're out there for a reason, and it's going to be through the duration of the project, again, that Wilton's administering, but we're going to be reimbursing the cost.
So when you guys did a new detour, was that something that got better approval by the town and police?
Yeah. So they reached out to us and we said, hey, how can we work together? Where you wanted to put the temporary signal, it's just not going to work. But how can we do? We hear you about taking that sharp left turn. I forget the road's name exactly. But we sat down, we talked through it. They submitted a new plan and we had approved that. So that's something that is not uncommon. This is what we do through all 169 towns and cities. Every municipality has their own local traffic authority, and they bring us concerns, whether it's a detour route, whether this stop sign intersection should be converted to traffic signals. Any of those local issues start at the, at the local level there with the police, with the town engineers. And we, have these standards that we need to apply consistently across all 169 towns and cities. So that's what was, government and work here in Wilton. And I think we ultimately made it to a good solution and good resolution with the town.
And when you have temporary signals, Josh, is the reason for rejecting, does that come down to cost at all, like how expensive it is? Or is it it's a matter of, protocols you have to follow?
Yeah, no, not so much cost, but more of, okay, if we put this in here, what's going to happen at this intersection? But then, take a step back, what's going to happen at all these other intersections, all the other roadways, and sort of model out what's going to happen with traffic when you put in a signal there, because it's going to be a signal that's going to be stopping traffic for a set period of time, regardless if there's one car there, five cars there. But it's something that we look at, and then we detail and explain, no, this isn't going to work. Here's the reason why. But let's find another solution, because we want to make sure that you know, whatever is out there in the field, people are going to follow those routes, and then people are going to make sure that they're doing, you know, safe things when they're behind the wheel.
And you guys did extensive studies on this area. In particular, I was told that with Cannon Road closed, and I'm probably going to say these roads incorrectly, so I apologize, but traffic exiting at Pimpawag and Sealy Roads onto Route 7 are increasing significantly. But your studies looked into all of that and the surrounding roads?
Yeah, looked at that. And again, it wasn't of, you know, well, we, you know, we have some bias against temporary signals. That's not true. We looked at it and said, you know, well, if we do a temporary signal here, it's actually going to have a ripple effect on other roadways, on other intersections, which could be a concern. So, again, you know, appreciate the police and the town, you know, working with us and our staff. You know, it's a collaborative relationship, and we certainly don't want to ever make decisions out of our Newington headquarters, because, you know, what happens in a conference room in an office in Newington isn't always exactly the real world experiences of people who live and work in these communities. And that's why we're so appreciative of the local traffic authorities and the police departments, that we can have these conversations and come up with solutions that make the most sense.
And Josh, before I let you go, I do want to touch on Memorial Day weekend. It was a few years ago that Connecticut had one of its deadliest Memorial Day weekend events, where we had multiple wrong way collisions happen on our highways, multiple deaths. I mean, it was horrible. It's something that I still have nightmares about so many years later. And obviously, we've been trying to really tackle, especially wrong-way driving. Could you talk about what has happened since, I want to say it was, 2022 was the deadly Memorial Day weekend? I want to say that was the year that it was that state police came on and said that we had, I want to say it was like 8 wrong-way crashes, yeah, and multiple deaths. It was awful. I mean, it's something that's just like ingrained in my brain. But what has taken place since then from the DOT, and certainly just a reminder going into this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot has changed in terms of the wrong way driving systems over the last 3 years. We have 211 systems active around the state of Connecticut now. I'm still catching up on Monday morning emails, but I know somewhere in there there's going to be one outlining how many wrong way drivers occurred this weekend. That's just a sad reality that this is happening far too frequently. The good news is the technology is working. Those lights are flashing. They are stopping the vehicles from entering the highway. They are turning around before going onto the highway in the wrong direction. But we don't want it to come to that. As we head into the Memorial Day weekend, we have partnerships with state and local law enforcement to have increased enforcement. We're in the middle of click it or ticket seatbelt enforcement. That's going to run through Memorial Day, but certainly would expect more troopers, more officers out for the busy holiday weekend. And you had mentioned that this is, you know, Memorial Day is the unofficial kickoff to summer. We're feeling it with the weather already at the top of this week here. And we want people to enjoy the celebrations, enjoy what they have planned over the Memorial Day weekend, but make sure that you're doing so safely and responsibly. Having that designated driver, making sure that you have those ride-sharing apps or those public transportation schedules readily available. People know better. They still choose to do the dangerous and illegal thing when they're getting behind the wheel after having too much to drink. So be safe this weekend. Travel safe. We want everyone to enjoy Memorial Day without having unnecessary tragedies play out on our roadways.
Yeah, no question. Josh Morgan, thank you so much. I hope you and your family get to enjoy Memorial Day weekend, and I'm sure we're going to talk again really soon.
You too, Emma, as well, Melissa. Take care now.
All right. Thank you again, Josh Morgan of the Department of Transportation, right here on WICC.